This is James Gilman with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show. And most of you know I've been very passionate about getting the word out regarding the evils of Monsanto and GMOs. And I spent some time in Maui, and I was very impressed with the people's movement in Maui, and they call it the Shaka Movement. And Shaka stands for Sustainable Hawaiian Agriculture for the Keiki and the Aina. And Keiki are the children, and Aina means the land, but more specifically, living on the land with respect for honoring Mother Earth. And, you know, I was very impressed that the Shaka Movement, living proof that people can make a difference when we come together. And this spring, the Shaka Movement mobilized and got almost double the 8,500 signatures needed. They got 15,000 total to get an initiative on the November 2014 ballot that, when passed, will establish a complete moratorium on the cultivation, growing, and testing of all GMO crops, seed crops, and test crops in the county of Maui until such practices are proven safe. So, anyway, we can get into this subject. It's a subject that's very dear to my heart, and I actually participated in the march while I was there. And it was amazing to see all the people actually standing up and becoming educated and getting behind the movement. So we've got the founder of the Shaka Movement on the air here. Hang on a second. We've got Joe Marshalla, and we've got Bruce Douglas. So, Joe and Bruce, are you with us?
Yes, we are.
We are here.
Aloha.
Aloha. Hey, I miss Maui. I want to get back. Probably November I'll be back over there again. But, you know, I interviewed, I think it was, oh, God, what was her name? Margie Willis,
Mark
I think.
Sheehan?
No, Mark Sheehan, too. I introduced him as well. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about the, she was the councilwoman. I introduced her on the show and talked a lot about the GMOs. She's over on the Big Island, I believe. And, you know, this is a subject I'm sure I'm just as passionate about it as you people are. But being in from Maui, I'm sure you have a little more at stake in the game than I do. But I'd love to hear about, you know, what's happening with the movement right now, and if people are still really getting behind this movement.
Well, yeah, it's a thrilling time here. Just to have some clarity. We actually collected more than 19,000 signatures, so more than double than what we needed to get on the ballot. And, you know, the interesting thing as far as the world's concern about what's happening here on Maui is that, you know, all the farmers that are growing GE, genetically engineered crops, you know, such as corn and soy and stuff like that throughout the United States and Canada and the various countries that still allow it, all of those farmers, all those agricultural, you know, monocrop industrial processes that are going on, all of those require seed, right? And specifically the BT corn, the insecticide corn, where every cell in that piece of corn is manufacturing insecticide, the BT corn that's grown throughout the United States that's used in corn syrup and corn chips and corn tortillas and corn everything. I mean, 80% of the seed that is given to the farmers to grow is manufactured here in Maui County in Hawaii. So we are the seed capital for the world. And so everyone who has concerns about, you know, whether it's cross-pollination, whether it's consumption, whether it's the diseases that are being correlated and almost directly associated now with this type of foods, everyone who has a concern, if we get rid of the seed factory, we alleviate everyone's concerns.
Yeah.
So the whole world is keeping their eyes on us. And maybe Bruce can tell you a little bit about how we're ground zero here for something, you know, as kind of a sacrifice zone.
Well, they're also doing testing. It's not just the growing a seed, but the testing of new life forms and trying new pesticides and experimentations. They're putting life forms out that have never been out in the world. And should these life forms get out, well, they're only sacrificing one little island, not a whole mainland. So the whole concept of using the Hawaiian Islands for their test crops makes us the sacrifice zone.
Yeah, we are the largest.
You're like guinea pigs.
We are the largest biological and chemical test site in the world. And as Bruce was saying, I mean, life forms that have never existed on Earth, chemicals that are not being used anywhere else on Earth, are all being tested here. And the reason being is that, you know, these GE crops, and we specifically use GE, genetically engineered, and this is the changing of the legal sense, because genetically modified is their big pushback now from the industry is, well, everything's genetically modified. Your body is, and it has been for millions of years, and technically that's correct. But engineered really specifies specifically that man was involved in the creation, and we're kind of like, let God play God. Well, they're not God, so get out of the way. Stop it. Anyways, what happens with the GE corn and the cotton and the soy is that they use tremendously more chemicals on those crops because they are specifically designed to be resistant and to be able to use these chemicals. Don't, you know, mistake for one moment that these crops are here for food. They are simply there as a vehicle to sell chemicals and to use chemicals. Now, the chemicals are becoming the weeds that are around the crops and stuff like that are now becoming resistant to the chemicals, as well as so there's like 15 new what they call super weeds that are out of control on the mainland and on Canada and other countries, and then there's over 500 new insects that have evolved to resist the pesticides that they're using. And so what they do is they come here trying to grow new crops that are resistant to stronger and stronger pesticides so that then they can replace the crops that are on the mainland throughout Canada and then use these really heinous chemicals so as to kill off the pests and the weeds that are now out of control.
And in order to do these test crops much more, they have to sterilize the soil. They have to have no biological life forms in that soil whatsoever when they do test crops and seed crops, so it doesn't mess up their experiments and their creation. So literally, they're spraying the ground every day with various chemical cocktail mixtures of unknown quantities and unknown actions, and sterilizing the soil to annihilate all life forms.
Yeah.
And you add that to the fact that we get three or four crop rotations a year, meaning they're already doing three or four times the amount of pesticides just because they have that many more crop rotations. On the Hawaiian Island.
Now, they have 150 different chemicals that they're using in combination with total disregard. I mean, no testing as to what these combinations are going to do to, you know, the environment and to the people. I know they're overspraying schools and the winds are kicking up and going across towns, and they're having a lot of birth defects and a lot of other real serious side effects from these chemicals. Could you update us on that, on the new information on that?
Yeah, what we know specifically is that there's at least 80 chemicals that are being used, but the possible combinations is a trillion trillion. In other words, more than drops of water in the ocean are possible combinations of these chemicals, and it is just absolutely extraordinary. See, what they're doing now, it appears, I mean, this is what appears to be occurring, is that, you know, you take something like 2,4-D, and what's the other component?
Atrazine, 2,4-T.
When you make Agent Orange.
At 2,4-5-T.
Yeah, 2,4-5-T. So you mix 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T together, and you get Agent Orange. So that's illegal. You can't make Agent Orange anymore. But what they'll do is they'll get each one of these chemicals separated out, and they become what's known as a restricted use chemical. In other words, you know, they can only use it a very specific way, specific humidity, specific wind patterns, and all this other kind of stuff. And some of the instructions on just one chemical on how to apply it are 70 pages, 90 pages long. Just, I mean, it's incredible what you have to do to use these safe. But what they're doing is, instead of mixing them beforehand and then using them as a single, you know, chemical, they mix them in combination, in sequence, in the fields.
For instance, when you mix atrazine and 2,4-D, two common pesticides, restricted-use pesticides, and you mix them in the field, you get 2,4-T, which is two of the three ingredients of Agent Orange, 2,4-D and 2,4-T. Add 2,4-5-T, you have full Agent Orange. Now, they would never approve Agent Orange to be spread, but they're creating those by mixtures out in the fields.
So it's extraordinary. Now, as far as, like, you know, you're saying the schools are being sprayed and all this other kind of stuff, it is very true. There's the fugitive dust, and the dust is everywhere. The, you know, the wind blows, and you get it in your home, you get it in your car, you got it in your clothes, you've got it on your towels, on your bed, and you're just, you know, literally constantly being exposed to these. And there's a huge amount of respiratory diseases that are going on here. Birth defects are out of control. I mean, we have one heart birth defect that is 10 times greater in our infants than anywhere else in the United States. And these little kids, I mean, one of them he's 3 years old, and he's going in for his 8th open heart surgery, you know, to try and stay alive. And it's just, yeah, and children being born with body parts outside of their bodies, their entire digestive system, their stomach or their intestines, being born outside of their bodies. And we've got the pictures. Come to our website. You can watch the videos. I mean, this is not us making it up. This is public knowledge now. And so the people are just saying, enough already. This is out of control, and it's got to stop.
Yeah, when you see things like that, and especially what it's doing to the children, and let alone the, you know, the water there, we were testing the water, and it was so full of the Roundup and all the other things that, and a lot of the water is catchment water there. And there are some wells, but... you know, that stuff just doesn't go away. And, you know, everybody goes there on vacation, and they think they're coming to this pristine environment, and they're actually pretty much drinking Roundup and God knows how many other chemicals in their water, and they're swimming in it. It's when it rains, you know, the water turns all muddy along the oceans there, and it's full of all those chemicals. So I know a lot of people that got very ill just by going there, drinking the water, and swimming in the ocean.
Well, our four turtles are suffering. They have tumor growth all over their heads, and some of them are blinded by the tumors going over their eyes, and it's really ugly and gross for the poor
creatures. Reefs are dying. Yeah. So we're doing what we can to make a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing what we can. Now, fortunately, we have an advantage in Hawaii in that in the Hawaiian state constitution, there is something called the Public Trust Doctrine, and it's Article 11, Sections 1 through 10. And the Public Trust Doctrine actually gives the environment rights. And it specifically states that the public trust resources, which are the shared resources of all the people, the land, the air, the water, and the, you know, the and land, air, water, and
oil,
reefs and the beaches and everything, mm-hmm. are to be conserved and protected for current and future generations. And so when we realized that, we said, well, gosh, no one's advocating for the Constitution here. I think we should advocate for the Constitution. And so basically the campaign has been really one of having a question. All we have to do is just have the question. Are we absolutely certain and guaranteed that everything that's happening here is for the best interest of the current and future generations? And if there's a shadow of a doubt, let's check it out. And so essentially that's what the campaign is. And one more thing for the listeners, I'll just drop this and then we'll do something else, but this was the absolute key to the success that we've had so far. And that is, the entire campaign has never been against GMOs or against the biochemistry that is taking place, the chemical combinations. What it has always been about is for something. We are for sustainable Hawaiian practices. We are for self-sustainability. We are for cleaning the environment. And people can get behind that. I mean, as Bruce was saying, I'll let you tell you, we got tired of, you know, waving our fists. You know?
More time walking down the street, waving your fists in the air, you know, shaking your fists to the sky, being angry, mm-hmm. like, okay, that's fine, that helps your release, but what does that really do? And how many hearts are we really winning outside of the environmental circles? So our namesake
that's
itself,
it.
Sustainable Hawaiian Agriculture for the Keiki and the Aina, the Keiki, the kids, the Aina, the land. It says right there in our name.
And it seems to be picking up. The, you know, Jackson County, who just passed their moratorium, did the same thing as us. Mm-hmm. And they were for agriculture. They were, you know, they didn't say anything against GMOs. Their whole campaign was for their own sustainable and organic agriculture. And everyone can get behind a positive, let's do something, much more than it seems that they're getting behind, you know, monsters and Monsatan and...
Yeah.
I mean, all that's pretty obvious. But let's get on the other side of that equation and build a better world.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that when I put Monsatan out all the time on my emails.
Yeah, well, me too, you know, but we've made a transition.
This is what Monsatan's up to now, you know, like this.
Yeah.
I just put it out there and let people know, you know, about what's happening so they can make a decision or do something about it. I know before I came there, I got real strong inner guidance that to get involved with that. I mean, I was just spiritually shoved, you know, into the movement, basically. And on a higher level, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, hang on, my phone. It's my phone. So anyway, on a higher level, what happened was it got very clear message just pushed into it that this is so important because, you know, Maui's like the heart center of the planet, and what's done there in Maui is going to spread, and it's going to move out across, you know, the states and other places across the world, basically. So, you know, and I'm not trying to go woo-woo. It's just that's the information I got, a very strong, you know, push in that direction that this is so important, what you're doing there, and to get some kind of moratorium, it's going to create a template for others, you know, to move in the same direction.
Yeah, well, everything that we've created as an open-source technology. So in other words, we generated a bill for this moratorium that can be copied by any municipality. We've created a website that we will simply give away to anyone who wants to start a program. So, one, I mean, you know, writing a law is a big deal. Well, we got one written for you. All you got to do is just, you know, kind of tailor it to your particular area. And as far as a website, well, you just put your name on it, and then you have the most comprehensive database and video workshop area and training and educational system that's available on the planet. And so we're creating a turnkey kind of open source system for anyone who wants to do this type of activity. All they got to do is write us an email, and we'll hook them up.
That's great. Yeah, that's what really needs to happen. I know I was in Hood River the other day, which is the biggest town next to us, and there was everybody on the street. There was all these people on the street signing petitions, you know, to label all GMOs to get the labeling, but I'm all for just stopping it all together. You know, it's an abomination. It needs to be stopped, and we need to get back to organic, you know, working with the land and working with the nature intelligence and things like that. You know, get our feet dirty and our hands dirty again.
Yeah, well, somehow we survived millions of years, or at least hundreds of thousands, without the agrochemical companies. It would seem to me we could continue to do so. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're making all these little... Yeah, they're making these mini Godzillas there, you know, that are going to be roaming everywhere now. I can see these monster bugs and plants, and who knows, they're probably going to take on an intelligence of their own with the radiation, and we're going to have Godzilla all over again.
It's going to be interesting if they continue, yeah.
Some giant turtle. they have one of those in Japan. I guess they have, I forget the name, some giant turtle that takes off and flies around and wreaks havoc on everybody. But, you know, it seems like we seem to be going in that direction.
Mm. Well, I like to say we have one Goliath and 150,000 Davids on this island.
Yeah, it's. I was very impressed when the march there in Maui when I was there was just amazing how many people were involved in that. And I mean, I didn't do a head count. It's probably at least a couple thousand, would you say?
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I thought it was kind of interesting. They had a little drone flying over, but I guess that was just a news agency that was doing the drone. But
that was actually ours.
Oh, that was yours. Okay.
Yeah, that was ours. We were getting some video footage for promotional purposes.
Yeah.
We told everybody it was our drone, don't worry.
Yeah.
I took
friendly drone.
I go, what's the drone doing here? I go, this is getting crazy. But anyway, yeah, I found out it was a friendly drone. But anyways, I liked, you know, the police seemed to be really in support of it. You know, it was very peaceful. Everybody had some amazing posters with messages on them, and overall, I think it had quite an impact on Maui.
It was the largest rally and march that ever happened on Maui, and it all came together in little under 2 weeks. That's the level of participation that's happening in an organization here, that everyone just said, nope, this has to happen, and we're going to make it happen. And Bruce was a big part of that. I don't know how he does it, but, everything here, it's not like we're this huge organization. The kind of the beauty of it is that all Shaka Movement really is doing is creating a container and kind of the tone of the message, but it is the people. I mean, the Shaka Movement is a horizontally structured kind of movement where there isn't like the talking head leader and everyone saying, ooh, follow him, da, da, da. No, it's principles, you know, principles.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it would help your listeners as well to understand that the major principle behind the message, kind of the tone of the entire thing, is based on a philosophy that is characterized by these words, and that is that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah.
And when we brought the heart into it, no one could deny it. Everyone's been looking for some way to express that heart, to really express it to into action. And I guess we got lucky or were guided correctly because we are so blessed to have, you know, Ned's well over 20,000 people now. And the funny thing is, just barely under, I mean, only 42,000 people vote on the entire island. And so we've got just under half of them already excited and energized around this.
Nice. Well, I mean, there's nothing like the unified field, you know, as far as dropping in the heart. You've got the hookup, you know, to the whole island, the whole planet. And I know it's very important for people to gather together and stay in the heart when they do gather together and focus on, you know, the future and creating a sustainable future not, as you said, you know, not waving your fist, not screaming, yelling, everything else, just, you know, appeal to their heart and appeal to their children, you know, and say, hey, look at what you're creating here. Do you want this for your own family? Do you want this for your future generations, you know, and to start moving in that direction?
Well, the funny thing for myself, just in my own evolution, because there's quite an evolution that you go through, spiritually and emotionally and psychologically in your being when you begin to really get involved in something like this. And for myself, I really came to realize that the truth doesn't get any more true if I'm yelling it. I mean, truth is truth. And I can yell it or I can just simply speak it. And when I'm yelling it, you know, with any type of kind of charge to it, I mean, you know, it's not that I don't, what have you. It's almost like I'm empowering that energetic. It's almost that's what feeds them, if you will. And the opposition to this heart space, save the planet kind of movement really knows how to deal with, I mean, they've constructed and they know exactly how to manage the angry hippies, the tree-hugging, minimalize it and do all this other kind of stuff, and they have no idea what to do with the love. I mean, zero.
Oh, yeah.
And they're freaking out because they have no idea.
You know, basically, too, the mother's love, too, and the love for the children and the land, they have no idea what to do with that. You know, I go into the mindset, I think about that. What, I mean, how could you do something like that, create these combinations and these Franken creatures and foods and things like that and continue to do that and feel good about who you are and what you're doing and things like that. And I'm just amazed that people can continue to go to work every day and support that kind of consciousness and those manifestations. I wonder if you ever, you know, talk to them and just say, hey, I'm just curious, how do you support this in your own mind and how do you, other than, you know, you're just trying to feed your family, basically.
Well, I haven't had any direct contact with actual engineers who have worked in this industry. I think of it very similar to the Manhattan Project or things of that nature, where, you know, there were over 100,000 people that worked to build the atom bomb, and none of them knew, except for 12 people, what was really going on. And it's kind of like the bank teller doesn't know what the bank manager knows, and the bank manager doesn't know what the regional manager knows, and the regional manager, it's kind of a need-to-know basis. And quite frankly, you know, the indoctrination for the science over the years, I mean, you know, they're putting out coloring books now to the children here in the schools and stuff like that, you know, and promoting genetically engineered blah, 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 everything. And so that was fun to, you know, address. But I really believe that many of the people are, you know, the one person's working on just getting this particular enzyme to do this one thing. And they spend their entire life just looking at that one thing, and it's so complex and so overbearing in their mind and all the considerations that they don't get outside into the bigger picture, if you will, in their minds. And it's kind of like many people don't have time to be activists or learn these things because they're so busy struggling just to make a living, you know? And so there are blinders on. And the thing we have to remember, though, that, you know, it's all being done under the guise of national security. You know, the truth of the matter is that this entire operation, the reason the proliferation, you go down the revolving door of the interlocking corporates, so who have either been lawyers or scientists inside these biotech companies and who are now the head of the EPA and the FDA and all these organizations, and it just goes down. There's like 20 of them. I mean, the key, you know, positions that all decisions are made and regulations are made are held by former biotech industry presidents or lawyers or things of that nature. And the entire thing is actually a military operation. GMOs, quite frankly, you know, are a weapon. And, you know, you control the food supply, as Kissinger said, and you control the people. Simple as that. And, you know, we have various reports, various people, very credible, you know, Dr. Lauren Pang is one of the five citizens bringing this initiative forward, and he's had conversations with military leaders who said, well, we had to grow it in our fields here so that people thought it was safe, so that then when they get it over there, you know, if we don't like what they're doing, we can just drop a few Terminator seeds amongst the crops on the plane and turn their crops off and they don't have any food. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a pretty big deal when you're dealing with a military operation, you know.
What's weaponized food? It's just unbelievable.
Exactly.
And then, you know, it ties right into all the additives, you know, the aspartame, the fluoride in the water.
Yeah.
You know, not to go down that rabbit hole, but when you look at everything, the chemtrails, everything together, you just go, who is behind this? I mean, where's the head of this dragon?
Yeah. Yeah, well, ultimately, it's our unconsciousness who's behind it. And, you know, if we think of a singularity of consciousness here on the planet, there are parts of that singularity that are less aware of other parts of it. And I really believe that that singularity is becoming aware of itself and these things are being exposed. And it's all part of a greater harmonization into a higher harmonic in order to be able to facilitate a greater resonance here that we all have a taste and know of and are aware of, but we are heading towards. And, you know, the whole 2012 and what happened there and you know, it's been a whole series of events and harmonizations and calibrations of our actual energetic as beings. And, you know, then we have the neighbors checking in on us, wanting to help out as well. So I don't know that it's even for myself, you know, conceivable to truly understand where it is we are going. I think that we can kind of hint towards it, lean towards it, wonder it, but when we're actually in it, it's going to be completely different than everything that we've thought it was. But there's certainly a transformation taking place. And I look at, you know, there's so much dark and there's so much, oh, my God, everything that's evil and awful and happening on the planet, and you got all of that. And then you have an equal and opposite action where all this beauty and all this light and all this magnificence mm-hmm. is occurring. And so we get a choice as to whether we want to focus on that dark side or we want to focus on the light side. And I think more people are turning to the light now. And it's an extraordinary thing to be on the planet, you know.
Well, it does seem to me it's like there's a difference between judgment and being emotionally involved in the negative and things and discernment and just saying, hey, this is what's going on. This needs to stop. You know, we can't.
Yeah, you nailed it.
These are the ramifications of this and educate people and, you know, get it into the unified field. This is what's going on. We need to change. And I see that unity consciousness wave, you know, the ninth wave the minds talk about is coming in big time right now. And I just don't see how the separation game or the tyranny or those who are doing harm to the planet or others can continue. You know,
the whole thing is collapsing. I mean, you know about the devaluation of the dollar, and it's no longer going to be the currency on which all of the currencies are based. You know, you see mm-hmm. Wall Street falling apart. You see the medical system falling apart. I mean, it's all falling apart. And there's going to be us Earth stewards who are going to, you know, going to have to help pick it up and put it back together.
Yeah, I mean, they're not frequency specific to where the Earth is going right now, so they aren't going to be able to continue. And that always brings me hope. I go, well, this is temporary. You know, they're going to have their day, but they are going to implode because they just aren't going to be able to hang out here, considering where, you know, the Earth is going in her evolution.
Yeah, it's kind of like the density of a glass. You know, when you get that right vibration, the glass just shatters because mm-hmm. it can't resonate in the field. Well, that vibration is raising up like that, and everything that is too rigid and non-harmonious with what is really about life here on the planet is simply going to shatter like that glass.
I just had a bad image of the heads of the Monsanto guys.
Like that Mars attack, right? You know?
Yeah, too much light and energy coming in, you know, can't contain it, boom, you know.
But forces of love are so much more stronger than the forces of hate. Dalai Lama, when he was here a few years ago, one of his talks and his speeches, what's real, love or hate? Love can be self-existing. You can just feel love, you can be love, you can stand in that vibration, not a dependent arising. But hate must have an object, must have a subject. I hate you. As I have a subject and an object, therefore, it's not real. Only love is real.
It's transitory. Yeah, it's interesting, the whole shift going on here. I feel really good. I know we're right in the middle of a three-week shift right now that huge energies are coming into the planet, and some people aren't dealing with it very well. But I would tell people,
you're in this room.
Yeah, just say, this too shall pass. You know, just take a deep breath, get out in nature, take your shoes off. You know, sit down, process it, you know, let it go through because, you know, there's only going to be more energy coming in and we have to rise to the occasion, you know, with these shifts coming through.
Yeah.
Good old galactic.
Okay, well, that's about it. Have a good day.
Shift is over.
We have a saying here, when people are really in their stuff, you know, and trying to project or blame, we go, well, how's that working for you?
Exactly. Exactly.
Have fun with that.
Have you been down that road before? Remember?
Yeah, I go, well, you want to heal this and process it, or do we need to go do something? Or do I need to go somewhere else?
One thing that we're encouraging people, you know, it's kind of like back in World War II, you know, when they did the Victory Gardens.
Oh, yeah.
And they encouraged every family, you know, because they were using most of the petroleum and things like that and food supplies to supply the troops and to make weaponry and things like that. And so there was going to be a big crush in the food supply. And so we were encouraging everyone, you know, at the time in the United States, to everyone build a Victory Garden. And everyone did. I mean, there was not a house that didn't have one. And you might live in an apartment, you might live in certain places like that, but you can still be growing sprouts, you know? I mean, a plant's nutrient potential, okay, every plant has a maximum nutrient potential where it has the most nutrients, you know, that it's possibly going to have, and that happens somewhere between 3 and 14 days, that the maximum nutrient potential of that plant happens between 3 and 14 days, and the sprouting phase. And then after the sprouting phase, it begins to grow the plant, and all of those nutrients get, you know, distributed throughout the plant, and it kind of dilutes the nutrient potential. And so it's so much so that like a ping pong ball size of broccoli sprouts has as many, if not more, nutrients than an entire head of broccoli. And so really begin thinking, you know, in terms of if you've got to, you know, put a few boxes in, start growing some lettuce, start growing some various things that you can that way. If you're living in an apartment, you really don't have that, you can be sprouting everything. You can be sprouting your nuts, your seeds, your and what have you. And then there's literally more so that, you know, potential nutrients in that food than you can even buy in the store. But then most certainly, if when the seed factory shuts down and the entire food supply is affected as it is right now, it might be really useful to have some of your own nutrients available at your home, because they might be a little less available in the stores for a while.
Exactly. We have massive gardens here, and we're pretty self-sufficient. We have some energy needs that we need to straighten out, but other than that, we'll be totally self-sufficient. But the you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about, and I don't know if you know much about that. I know they actually did didn't they ban chemtrails in Hawaii as well?
That's talking to the right person. I wrote a law with an environmental lawyer, which didn't ban. It was a regulatory bill that regulated geoengineering activities based on the air pollution standards. And it was submitted by one of our council persons, our one awake council person, submitted it, and it got as far as Corporation Council, and it came back. And it turned out that the counties are specifically preempted from any air pollution standards, that only the state and the state health department have jurisdiction over that, and the counties were specifically forbidden. So I have to come back, instead of using air pollution standards, I have to come back using solar dimming and climate manipulation standards, because nobody has claimed jurisdiction over that or specifically forbidden counties from having that effect.
Yeah, that's amazing, because I know what they're spraying. I mean, aluminum oxide, strontium, barium, all those things are heavy metals and have a, you know, toxic buildup, and they're pretty severe. But I know the aluminum stops the uptake, you know, of the moisture and, you know, water and minerals and things in the plants. And we're having, our forests here are in really bad shape right now because of the heavy chemtrailing. I've seen about one-third of the forests actually dying right now.
Well, interesting that the GMO seeds that Monsanto is growing here in Maui County, part of their patent is aluminum-resistant seeds.
Yeah.
And that's part
exactly
of the patent.
Yeah, that's where I was going with that. And so, you know, it's, you know, I look at the goals of these people and what they're doing, and now, I mean, Bill Gates is heavily involved in Monsanto, you know, invested into it. And then he also, they bought into Blackwater, which is a little insane when you get down to it, you know, a bunch of mercenaries. And then on top of that, now he's heavily invested in the geoengineering.
Well, what's happening, and what I've been following for years, the whole concept that it's a chemtrail coming out of a plane is a misnomer. Most of what's happening, probably 90% of the aerosols that are floating over the country are coming from what I'm calling chem bombs, aerosol explosions, happening over the ocean primarily.
Mm-hmm.
There's boats out there, and you can see from the infrared images these flumes rising out of the ocean from a point source, sometimes going out in all directions like a bomb, and sometimes point source against the wind, and sometimes point source over a period of time generating from one point in the ocean and creating highly reflective clouds that are all in the stratosphere. Now, the stratosphere is high above the troposphere, above where planes fly in the stratosphere, and there's not supposed to be clouds in the stratosphere higher than planes fly. There is a jet stream. There are clouds in the tropopause between the stratosphere and the troposphere, but not in the stratosphere. So anytime you see stratospheric clouds, they don't exist. Those are the aerosol clouds, and they move the opposite direction of the trade winds here. They're very easy to see. They're high speed when you look them on a satellite, but they look slow speed from the ground because they're so high. But that is the true source of it, and I actually have a website called MauiSkyWatch.org, and on that I have a 40-minute expose about that I gave about the chem bombs and my research on it. At the Consciousness Against Chemtrails conference in L.A. Yeah. 2 years ago. And
I think
they have one showing how
technology.
Hurricane Flossie was totally geoengineered. It shows this big explosion happening and shows
yeah.
exactly how they do it from the satellite imagery.
I think it's multiple. They always have multiple ways. You know, you go into 911, there's multiple things that happen there. It's just to confuse, you know, the investigation or whatever. But I don't know, we see these planes coming over here and do a total grid pattern and turn around and go back the other way. And I don't think airlines see that. Oh, I forgot my luggage. I got to come back and land. Yeah, but it's hilarious watching it here. And I show people, I go, put your hands up and put your thumb and little finger out and look at that plane. If that contrail coming out of the plane and is any bigger than that, you have a chemtrail. And,
right.
You know, they are spraying heavy, heavy here and putting a grid down. And we have these crystal blue skies here and incredible sky watching area here because the whole place just opens wide up. The universe here and the stars are just brilliant. And there's some nights all you see is hazy, you know, dim stars
right.
You know, the blue sky turns to gray and people are coughing and hacking and they don't know where it's coming from. And one day they sprayed really heavy and 60% of the people were out of the school. The kids were sick with flu-like symptoms. So I think there's a lot more going on here from my experience and what I've seen. They have multiple ways of distributing this nonsense.
Well, I don't see, from satellite images, I don't see the chemtrails themselves, but what I do see is the aerosol explosions are really obvious.
Yeah.
The chem bombs, where they're coming. So
well,
what I'm seeing floating over the Pacific Northwest is actually has its originations, you know, 1,000, 2,000 miles away in the middle of the Pacific
Ocean.
Then
they accentuate it over the land, but that they actually begin the seeding out here in the ocean.
Well, I know they use the trade winds to bring them in. You know, they do it out in the ocean and let the trade winds carry it. But I just think when you look at the big picture, you know, and you look at the people behind this and who they are, and some people still worship them as you know, wonderful people to look up to or, you know, especially, you know, I watched the polio thing over there with Gates, and after he got through his inoculations, they had 12, maybe 20 cases of polio, and after they were done with inoculations, they had like 45,000.
Wow.
You know, so.
Yeah.
So that's, I said, do the math, you know. It's like, I do believe there was some live virus in there, and you know, and this World Death Organization that they're working through is really not who we think they are, but I think it is, like you're saying, it's all about education. We need to start looking at the facts, you know, and looking at the results and the effects and start looking at the numbers.
I figure that actually companies like Monsanto are doing us a favor by being so outrageous and so outlandish that it's pushing people into action who would normally be complacent.
Yeah, they're unifying
people. There's a greater
people.
Scheme to what's happening here. You know, nothing happens by accident. There must be a reason for this. So I see it as a beautiful opportunity of pulling people together, educating people, having people care about something other than the latest football game and the latest rock star.
Yeah,
and,
You
know, start talking about environment and talking about health and talking about what choices they really want.
You know, there is a psychological, emotional process, and it's best characterized by kind of what Margaret Kubler-Ross taught about death. Because there is a psychological death to the ideology and the paradigm that is occurring. And so the acronym is DABDA, D as in dog, A, B as in boy, D as in dog, A, DABDA. And so the first thing you witness when people are, you know, you try to bring this information out is denial. Oh, that's not what's happening. You know, it couldn't be happening. And that's a natural part of the death process. And then the next process is an anger, where you're like frustrated with the world and you hate this and I'm being used in an experiment and it goes on and on. And then there's bargaining. So there's denial, anger, and then bargaining. And the bargaining is, well, you know, maybe it isn't so bad, or maybe there could be some good uses for it. Maybe, you know, making medicines and you try and justify it again. And then you go through the next phase, which is depression. And it's just so depressing, and you think, gosh, you know, why have I brought children into this world? It's all this way, and then eventually there's an acceptance that this is what is happening, this is the truth, and I'm going to do something about it. And everyone that I've seen join this movement has gone through that, either in very subtle ways or very strong ways. So it seems to be consistent, though, that when we begin to open our eyes to this, and the greatest thing to remember is that those who don't know are truly victims. For the grace of God or the grace of the aliens or grace of somebody, there's been those of us who've been able to break out of the matrix and be free from it. But are the people in the matrix, you know, guilty of being in the matrix? No, they are victims of being brought up a generation after generation of the indoctrination and the dogma. And so where that phrase comes back then, again, that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so once again, it's back to that heart place and to be able to free them from the matrix in a loving way to say, hey, man, this is what's going to be best for your kids and you and on and on and on. But you will watch and see everyone go through at least those five stages, you know, a couple times. And sometimes it's really intense, sometimes it's really subtle, but we do go through those stages as we bring this into our lives.
Well, some people look at it, they go, this is just so big and just so ugly. Like, what can I do about it? And they said, and then they just, like, close up, you know, into a little ball and just say, forget about it. And I always tell them, you know, one on the side of God is the majority, you know, or one on the side of truth is the majority, you know, just get up and, you know, lose your fear and speak your truth and don't, you know, and there's a lot to say about, I mean, I get called all kinds of names during the show. They go, oh, you're spreading fear porn, you know, and I said, I have no fear. I've already died a couple of times. I said, you're afraid of looking at the facts and you're afraid of actually looking at what is really happening here. And that's the true fear, you know, and so, and you know, denial and all the other things that come with it. But, you know, it's kind of amazing. I just said, you know, I can look at all the facts with loving detachment and see very clearly, you know, what's going on here. But, I mean, eventually you can't just detach from this whole thing because, you know, you're in it. It's affecting you, your family, and the next generation. So, you know, you do have to eventually act and do something.
You know, you remind me, back in the 70s, I was hanging out with a lot of Krishnamurti's materials. And I believe I was reading the book Impossible Question, and he talks about fear. And he was trying to dispel, or he dispelled within me, the concept of fear of the unknown, right? That we have fear of this thing, the unknown. Well, the truth of the matter is, if every moment is fresh and new in our lives, literally every moment, it's a repeatlessness that is constantly occurring. Everything's emerging fresh and new. If it's fresh and new, that means it's never happened before, so therefore it is unknown. And so our entire existence is unknown, the great mysteries, as native populations talk about. So what he postulates is that it is absolutely impossible to be afraid of the unknown. What we have fear of is letting go of the known.
Yeah,
and exactly
change.
What you were just saying there, you know, letting go of that, the absolutes, that, well, this is the way it was. I mean, literally, your whole world just falls apart because everything it was built on has no relevance. You know, it's kind of like what Mayor Baba said, I think it was, you know, that man takes all that is important as unimportant, and all that is important as, you know, all that is unimportant as important, and all that is important as unimportant. And that's starting to shift now.
It is, definitely. I've seen it here. I've seen people that I thought were never going to get it. And they're shifting now, and they're awakening, and they're just saying, boy, this is insane. And they're just, you know, they're seeing, you know, the loss of rights. They're seeing the damage being done to the families and the earth, and they're just, they're starting to wake up to the big picture, and a lot of them are just getting ready to do something about it. It's amazing. But, you know, what took some people years to figure things out and wake up, these other people are waking up in just, like, weeks.
Yeah. You know, it's what you're reminding me of, one of the kind of beautiful things that's happening here on the island. I mean, you know, back from Plato's Republic, back, you know, the writings of how you manage a democracy or a republic is, you know, divide and rule, right? And so they did that to Native Americans, where they divided them and gave some special perks, and then they were kind of on the side of the white man, and they would just, you know, and created a division between the various tribes that didn't truly exist to the degree it did. Well, the same thing happened here in Hawaii. And you have your local population, the people who were here. And when this land was occupied, because it's not a state, it's technically not a state, it is an occupied territory, and they pretend it's a state, but it's really not, and the native local populations here now are recognized by over 130 nations worldwide as an independent nation, and so you're about to see that really kind of take off, the whole sovereignty movement here. But the point is that the people were divided. And the people were divided by many different ohanas, many different kind of tribes, if you will. And those divisions, as a result of this moratorium, are dissolving. And the ohanas, the tribes, the various segregations that existed before are dropping their colors, and they're coming together for their land, for what it is they want in the first place. Because if they don't save this land, then what are they going to fight over in the future? You know, kind of thing, right?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that's like we envisioned that, we hoped that to happen. We didn't know how it was going to happen, and then it just started. You know, it just started.
I noticed
and
a lot of that,
going
a lot
more
of
and more
family.
Every day, and it's extraordinary to see.
Yeah.
That happened, to have all the local people come together within their cultural beliefs and their cultural systems, and to unify them in such a way that they've never been. And it's just the most extraordinary and beautiful experience to be part of.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was there observing that, and I was blown away at the energy and the coming together there. And I go, boy, this is the blueprint. This is the blueprint that needs to happen on the entire planet. You know, we're coming up to the end of the hour. I wanted to, if you had anything else you wanted to close out with, and also give your website and how people can help the Shaka movement and support, you know, the moratorium on the GMOs.
Our website is shakamovement.org. Shaka, S-H-A-K-A, movement, all one word, .org. And on that, we have all sorts of resources where you can go to and learn about various subjects in GMO. And it's a wonderful website. And we have a whole new revamped website coming up in, what, within a week?
Tomorrow,
maybe.
It's supposed to come online. Where we have what's called Shaka U, and it's the single most extensive resource center on GMOs that exist on the planet today. We've spent a year going through everything that's on the internet and then everything that comes up fresh. And we went through it all, legitimized, double-checked it, vetted, and because there's a lot of claims out there about what GMOs are and different things like that are unfortunately inaccurate. And so we want to be the accurate source. And so we've spent literally a year going through everything. So if you want a one-stop shop, all the best videos, all the best articles, we're it. And we created something called Shaka U, which is Shaka University. And you can learn there. But we're also doing an Indiegogo site. I mean, we've been doing this out of our pockets, man, and we need help.
Yeah,
so if you've got any
extra
cash and can donate to our cause, that would really help, because we're trying to take care of, we are the hope for the world.
And we're setting an example here of how other places can do it. Because most counties do have an initiative process, and it's hard to do things on a state level, but you can do it on your local county level. And that was the beauty of this whole process, is giving people hope that there is something that you can do. Yes, go out and get the signatures, get people to vote, and put your intentions out there and make it happen.
Yeah, we have a pretty good listening base, and we have three massive newsletters, so I can send it out on those as well. So I'll be sure and get all that information and shoot it out. Anything you want to send me that you want to go out over the newsletters, I'm totally 100% behind you. So
realize that we found out from our sources that Monsanto and their allies have already purchased over $1 million worth of media advertising time from the media companies that come out and put that all together for the island. So
they wait till the last 5 to 6 weeks, and then they hit it really hard.
Well, the good news is nobody's really believing in the lamestream media anymore. So
it is. I know that was the beauty. Yeah. That was the beauty in Jackson County. That was their campaign.
We don't believe your bull.
Television campaigns, the radio, and so nobody's buying it anymore, you know.
Thanks so much
for all that you do in the space that you've held all these years and just the consciousness that you carry and you spread throughout the planet. I really appreciate you, brother, and thank you for this opportunity for us to share what we're doing with those of you who are listening and those of you who care. We're really grateful for this opportunity, and thank you for having us.
All right, and keep up the great work, and definitely as many people are out there that if you can help the chakra movement, definitely hit the shockmovement.org and make a donation and get this movement flowing and get it, let's go national.
Excellent. Let's check back in a couple months.
Great. All right, Karen, thanks for coming on the show. We're out of time, and we'll talk again.
All right, aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha.